are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, October 27th, 2021. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP. Smash the button. You get the podcast once it goes live right to your phone. Push notification. Slide up. Rock and roll. We'll talk to Chris Otto, a very, very solid hockey handicapper. He mines the hockey betting data, the advanced stuff. He uses that data to help him not only bet pregame, but in-game. And there's one NHL team that is 7-0 to the first period under. Lots of hockey stuff coming up later on in the show with Chris Otto. Before we get to anything else, I want to thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. 6,000 followers on Twitter for Chicken Dinner. It means so much to me that you appreciate what we do with this show. Brought it back in August of 2020, so it's been just over 14 months or so. Hopefully you have taken something from this show. You have learned something. You have thought about things differently. You have faded the bartender. You have bet a future like the Atlanta Braves or Fernando Tatis Jr. and put yourself in a position to make money. NBA draft, NFL draft, Sammy Pucks. Whatever it is, thank you for being a part of this. It's a big number. Anytime you rack another 1,000, it's a big deal. So I wanted to thank everybody for being a part of this ride. It's very special to me. As you know, this show started back in 2016. Joe Ostrowski and myself brought this into the masses back in Chicago, and it was something at that time that we just didn't have. You couldn't really talk about sports betting on the radio or on television in Chicago. We both had bosses that were like, I don't know. It's not legal yet. Kind of shady. We don't talk about the point spread. Look where things are at now. One of the places this show was hosted, Nesson, a regional sports powerhouse in New England. They want Chicken Dinner. So things have changed, but the audience always makes the show, and I appreciate all you do for us. Thank you. Great weekend for the picks. 6-1, and I'm content with the loss too, honestly. Found out about Sean Clifford that he was going to play and start at quarterback for the Nittany Lions. So I thought, all right, let's take Penn State in the first half. They were up 7-0, moving, marching, had a chance to make it 14-0, but Clifford overthrew a receiver in the end zone. He was wide open. They kicked the field goal. Illinois had that drive of death where they went 13 plays or so, got into the end zone. It was 10-0, then it was 10-7. If it's 14-0 there, we're talking about Route City. Didn't happen, though, but I'll tell you what. Making that bet on Friday night was the right thing to do. I would do it again. Laid 13.5 when the news actually broke that Clifford was in. It shot through 14, got to 14.5, got to 15 at a couple offshore books. If that's 14-0 or 21-7, you are a winner making that bet early, getting ahead of the curve. It lost, I'm aware. I still think that's a good loss because of all the things that happened and the information that you had. Would you make it again? You might not. I would. Oregon, Wisconsin, Ole Miss, Alabama, Bengals, Bucks, boom. Let's go. We don't gloat, though. We move on. You don't rest on your laurels. You find more winners, and that's what we'll try and do. Atlanta Braves. Up 1-0 in the series. Our guy Charlie Morton out there pitching on a broken leg, trying to get guys out. Does it help that Morton's out? Absolutely not. Somebody asked me this morning, how does it feel? How do you feel with Charlie Morton out? How the hell do you think I feel with arguably our best pitcher on the shelf? It's probably going to be Freed, Anderson, Smiley. Freed, Anderson. Oh, man, what are they doing game 7? Well, let's not think about that. Let's pay attention to the offense. Every single starter for Atlanta got a hit last night. Jorge Soler, bang. first ever leadoff World Series home run. We'll take it. That offense doesn't quit. They thump the baseball, and even though the Braves are going to search for answers in games 4, 5, 6, and 7 with that rotation, they're going to have to shift a lot of things because we knew it would be Morton, Fried, Anderson. And then from there, you sort of have to get creative. But I believe in their offense, believe in their bullpen. Somebody said, got a hedge. No, I don't. I hate the Astros. They knocked off my White Sox. They knocked off the Red Sox. This is personal with Houston. I hate Altuve, Bregman, Dusty Baker with his gloves on and his wristbands. Come on. They're just not likable. And that's more than enough for me to hedge off Atlanta. Been through too much with this team. Preseason, 14, 18 to 1. Acuna goes down in July. Ozuna has that psychopath stuff off the field. Horrible stuff. So those two out of the way. And the general manager, Anthopoulos, goes out, retools the entire offense. Eddie Rosario, Adam Duvall, Jock Peterson, Jorge Soler, bring them in because we're trying to win this World Series. Injuries to the rotation. Yanoa gone. Soroka never came back. Now Morton's leg. I don't care. This team is too resilient, and it feels like, I hate using cliches. I don't like them really all that much, but it does feel like a team of destiny. Houston can hit the baseball, but I think Atlanta can hit it just as well, just as solid. They've got, you know, from two with Freeman through seven guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And last night, Soler led off. It's a lot of power in an offensive-friendly league. Houston's a bandbox. I'm telling you, I think there's a very solid chance Atlanta goes back home with a 2-0 lead. They've done their job already. You need a split. Go home 1-1, and we're already there. Look at the series price now. This is your time to hedge. If you want to hedge, go for it. I'm not going to do it. Come too far with this team. But if you're looking for a hedge, this is the time. This is the best price you'll probably get on the Houston Astros. If you shop around series price, you get 150 at the Westgate, 145 South Point, 145 Pinnacle, a couple of the American books, 140, 135. Good for you. You want to hedge it? Go for it. I'm not. Paulie's not a hedger. Well, Paulie wasn't a hedger. We're doing it for Paulie, the dead fish, bottom of the tank. Huge Braves guy. Let's go. Got four picks already in Ole Miss, Cleveland Browns, Oklahoma, East Carolina. Ole Miss, same old song and dance, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. I love Matt Corral. There's no player in the SEC aside from Bryce Young that I want with the ball in his hands late in games. And I get points now. Their speed, their tempo, their style, their ability to run the football. I made Ole Miss 3-point favorites in this game at Auburn. And there are some rumblings, some people I've talked to, that there are some suspensions around the Tigers program. So Auburn may be without a couple cats when we get closer to the weekend. That stuff is not yet public. Even if some of those guys play, I still like Ole Miss here. I've ridden this team all season long. Corral for Heisman, over 7.5 wins. Maybe I'm a little stubborn, a little biased, but I think Ole Miss catching anything in the game is the right play. Cleveland Browns, -3.5. Something about Case Keenum. I don't know what it is. I don't know how he does it, but this guy continuously, for years, has come into tough situations and captained the ship. Nobody bet the Cleveland Browns last Thursday. Everybody bet Denver. Denver, 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 Denver. Cleveland probably should have covered all the numbers, but a late touchdown backdoor by Denver, lose by 3. Cleveland covers all the late numbers, -1, 1.5, 2. We laid 3, pushed. This guy knows the NFL. He doesn't make mistakes. He comes in, studies the playbook. By all accounts, great teammate. That guy is a very capable backup. And I still think Baker Mayfield with a labrum issue and Case Keenum healthy are essentially the same player. Some of those offensive bodies getting healthier, on defense getting healthier, and I just envision a world where Ben Roethlisberger, who can't move, is being crunched in the pocket all afternoon by Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, all those bodies that Cleveland brings through the line. That Steelers team is not good. So I will lay 3.5. I think this thing closes 4, 4.5. I went to bed Sunday night, woke up Monday morning. It already went through 3. Went from 2.5 to 3, 3.5 is what it is. I think it keeps climbing, though. Wouldn't be surprised. Market has some 4, 4.5 Thursday, Friday by kickoff. Maybe it closes 4, but I'll lay 3.5. It is what it is. I like that team. I like the coaching staff. I think they're going to win this game by a touchdown. The other two, Oklahoma. I have no issue with Oklahoma struggling at Kansas. That game is isolated by itself. It was Williams' first ever road start, and I'm not going to dock him for how they played. Oklahoma has also not been a great team as far as blowing people out this year. But I also haven't been on Oklahoma. Not jaded off Oklahoma. Texas Tech just fired their head coach after a 5-3 start to the season. Texas Tech did blow a 14-point lead against Kansas State, and then Matt Wells gets canned. But Oklahoma, with the home cooking and the ability for them to turn things up with the running game and the passing game down the field, this could get ugly. Red Raiders, since 2019, 1-6 against ranked Big 12 opponents, and this is a situation where it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. This market actually opened, I think Metcalf at Circa opened at 22. So it came down, it crashed through that number, 21, big key number. Obviously 7, 14, 21, big numbers in college football. Opened 22, and it crashed down to about 17.5 at 6 o'clock on the 24th of October. There was some buyback here. I wanted to make sure there were some bodies that were healthy for Oklahoma. A couple guys weren't sure about. Now we are. So this market, 20 at Circa, 20 at Westgate, 20 at South Point, some 20s offshore, but there are some 19.5 still available. Caesars, DraftKings, FanDuel, PointsBet, some offshore 19.5s. Anything under 21, I'm cool with, but I'd rather you lay 19.5 before it gets to 20. If this does land 37-17, something like that, 41-21, I'd rather you lay the 19.5. Oklahoma probably gets bet back up because they're a public team, a lot like Alabama, Ohio State. Oklahoma's in that category where people bet them the closer to kickoff. I like Oklahoma. 42-17 is a score that I keep coming up with in my head. They're not going to stop Oklahoma. And Texas Tech, this is the beginning of a very, very tough schedule. Murderer's Row coming up for them as they finish their season and try and pick up the pieces from losing their head coach. I imagine this is a situation where the Red Raiders are sort of puzzled, perplexed by how things ended for Matt Wells. And I don't think it's this new sign of light at the end of the tunnel. I think this team is going to lose their next four games. I don't think they're going to be that close. And the last one. Talked to a couple people that know this conference really well, and they think East Carolina is going to roll. South Florida, they just beat Temple, but Temple stinks. So South Florida coming off a big, big win. They go on the road to East Carolina, and the Pirates opened. Actually, Metcalf opened them 6.5, and it crossed through 7 within 30 minutes. Most books open 9, 9.5. You see a 10 at DraftKings, a 10 at Pinnacle, a 10 at BetOnline. I think Chris has a 10. So it's getting up there, and I'd rather you lay 9, 9.5. Actually, aren't really any 9s at all that I can see. So 9.5, the number on East Carolina. They've been really, really good against some good teams. That record is a little misleading. They lost at App State. Lost to South Carolina, 20-17. Lost at UCF, 20-16. Lost at Houston, 31-24. Those are all games where they played up to the competition, hung around till the very end, and competed. Look at the game on October 2nd when they were at home against Tulane. 52-29 final score. That game was Tulane minus 3. So East Carolina here laying 9.5. I think this is a situation where they blow out South Florida. 34-17, 38-20. Something like that. So that's Thursday night, 7:30 kick on the East Coast, East Carolina. Got to talk about this game Thursday night, Packers and the Cardinals. We had a lot of people ask me, hey, do you like the Packers? Not really. I wish they were healthy. If they had Devontae Adams and Alan Lazard and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, if they were at full strength, yes, I would play the Packers. But in some weird way, I like the Packers more at plus 3.5 with those guys than I do without them at 6.5. There's a lot of people saying, hey, you can't lay a touchdown against Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, you can. Really easy. I don't really want any part of this game. And those of you know, I'm not a big Arizona Cardinals guy this year. They can go 13-4, 14-3. Still don't like them in the playoffs. I think Dallas is better. I think the Rams are better. I think the Packers are better. Tampa Bay is better. Arizona's good. They're not great. But I really don't want to bet on a Green Bay offense that's down in the dumps with these depth guys. Who's Rodgers going to be throwing to? They might get MVS back. Randall Cobb? Big game Bob? Robert Tonyan? I don't know. Rodgers is amazing, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals won this game by 7, 10. Wouldn't stun me one bit. So I've got to pass this one. I want no part of it. Some people are talking about teasing the Cardinals down 6.5 down to pick them, or minus half. I just don't want any part of it. Cowboys and Vikings, I will be on the Vikings here. Just waiting to see if we can get a 3. There's a possibility we do get there, but actually, as I say that, here come the 1.5s. Hadn't looked at the NFL board in the last couple hours. This was 2, 2.5, and now we're at, wow, 1.5 Circa, 1.5 Westgate, 1.5 Caesars, 1 at Bet Online. So the sharp guys came in and they took that number. It never touched 3. It was 2.5 painted pretty much everywhere Wednesday morning, and now we're down to 1.5, 2. That should tell you everything you need to know. Dallas Cowboys, 6-0 ATS. Why did the books open them pick? Minus 1. They know what they're doing here. Minnesota's going to have every shot to win this game. 4 games this season, the Vikings, 400 yards or more on offense. Last week against Carolina on the road, 571 yards of offense. They can run. They can throw. They've got weapons down the field. Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. Really good running game with Dalvin Cook and Madison. Kirk Cousins playing really well. And I don't think either team really has a coaching edge, although I'd much rather have Mike Zimmer than Mike McCarthy. This is a fishy, fishy line. And it looks like we're going to have to do something here because I'd much rather have 2 than 1.5. Damn. All right. Asleep at the wheel here, missing the 2.5. I was thinking, all right, this is going to get the 3. Maybe. Guess I was wrong there. So we'll be on Minnesota some way. That's a great teaser play, too. Take Minnesota from 1.5, 2, up through the 3, 4, 6, and 7. I love that teaser leg. Minnesota plus 2 to +8, plus 1.5 to 7.5. That's a great leg. I think they went out right. But if you're a teaser player, that'll be something that you're really looking to key in. Minnesota plus 1.5, 2. Tease that up. Eagles at the Jets. Ugh. Nick Sirianni, not a fan. Big picture. He reminds me of Matt Nagy. I don't think he's going to be a great coach long-term at that position. That being said, they're at the Detroit Lions this week. Markets moved up 3, 3.5. Adam Chernoff tweeted this out. At Adam Chernoff, C-H-E-R-N-O-F-F. Detroit this season, late third quarter, early fourth quarter. Week 1, trailed by 24. Week 2, trailed by 18. Week 3, trailed by 13. Week 4, trailed by 21. Week 5, trailed by 10. Week 6, trailed by 31. Week 7, trailed by 9. Net yards per play, 31st. Offensive EPA per play, 27th. Defensive EPA per play, 27th. Chernoff adds, their body of work is awful. That could very easily be a plug and play on the Eagles. I don't love laying 3.5 on the road, but the Lions are awful. I want to zoom through these next couple things before we get to Chris Otto. Horrendous against the spread numbers for Clemson. The Tigers haven't covered a spread all season, 0-7 ATS. In fact, Clemson and Missouri, the only two teams in the FBS that haven't covered a spread yet. But it gets worse. According to Ralph Michaels from Wager Talk, if you bet against Clemson and bet the Clemson under first quarter, first half, full game, you are 32-3-3. That is 91.4%. Holy shit. So fading Clemson and betting the under, again, one more time, 32-3-3. Seven full game sides and totals, six first quarter sides and totals, six first half sides and totals. Because when you play the FCS, you don't get the first quarter, first half usually. But that is incredible. And you're late to the party, obviously. Clemson a 10.5 point favorite this week. Ooh. Lonzo Ball triple-doubles are interesting. My buddy Brian Billick fired this, I think, last Friday night. Lonzo was 75-1 to notch a triple-double. He finished with 17, 10, and 10. 17 points, 10 boards, 10 helpers. My man Brian turned $7 into over 500. I can tell you this right now. You will no longer see any more 75-1 on Lonzo in that market. And in the four games he's played, 15-3-5, 13-4-1, 17-10-10, 12-6-4. How many is he going to get this season? 7? 8? You only need to hit 3 of them at 35-40-1 to guarantee a profit, a big profit, over an 82-game season. So I went back and I looked at the big triple-double numbers of all time. Westbrook had 42 one year. The Big O had 41, Westbrook 38, Westbrook 34, Chamberlain 31, Big O 26, Big O 26, Westbrook 25, Harden 22. The list goes on. Lonzo Ball could easily get 7 or 8 triple-doubles this year. And before the market catches up, you may want to pay attention to those games in the first month, first 2 months of the season. Because if he comes out in the first 24 games and he's got 4 triple-doubles, the books aren't going to hang 40-1, 35-1 anymore. They're going to catch on, but they haven't yet. That 75-1 was a very bad number, and the market has already essentially been cut in half. You can't knock it down, though. Can't make it 10-1 or 15-1. I think eventually that'll crater around 20, 22-1. If you hit 4, 5, or 6 of them, you're going to be up. And the last thing, saw this tweet from Ben Fox at bfox22. Quote, Nevada set an all-time record for the state, $786.7 million in September sports betting wagers. State took in over $54 million in revenue, end quote. That is a 6.9% hold for the house and proof that if you thought Nevada sports betting would fall off a cliff after legalization around the country, you were mistaken. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he handicaps the hockey on Twitter at PSU Otto, O-T-T-O. Chris Otto joining us on the show. What's up, Chris?
Hey, good to see you this afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
I read an article this morning that James Franklin is a super head coach in college football. That column was written Tuesday morning. Did they not watch Saturday's game? They're acting like he's walking on water out there.
They must have been watching with me in the corn maze. I didn't actually watch the game Saturday, but I was following it on my phone, and yeah, I was in utter amazement.
That's a guy you'd probably be happy. I don't want to speak for you, but I imagine a lot of people around Happy Valley would be happy to see James Franklin go. That's not why we're here, though. We're here to talk some puck. You were actually thrown on my radar about 2 years ago by our buddy Alex Smith, who's been studying your data for years now, and you guys have worked together. You mined a lot of that first period over data. So I wanted to sort of bring you on here because hockey season, believe it or not, we've already seen, you know, some teams have played six games. Most of them have played four or five, but we're getting on our way here in the hockey season. And before we talk about how you analyze the numbers and utilize those numbers, when did you start betting on hockey, Chris?
Yeah, I started probably really betting. Obviously, the jurisdiction issues, it was tough, you know, up until a couple years ago, really here in Pennsylvania, to be able to bet. I'd had some offshore stuff that I did, but really didn't start getting heavily into the analytics and the betting side of this until about 3-4 years ago. And then specifically into these period trends, probably 3 years ago, I think it was 2019 is kind of when that took off. Alex could confirm that, but there was some trends that happened in the spring of that year that really grabbed a lot of attention and kind of brought these bets to the forefront. I kind of partook in that, and then, you know, instead of relying on others for information, I just decided to go ahead and start to track it myself. So that's really when it started for me.
How does that tracking process go, and how are you watching and following all these games? That can't be a 10-15 minute job.
No, it's a manual process. Every night I spend probably about an hour and a half going through the data and logging all the scoring from each period. So there's really no way to get that information easily other than to manually get it, especially the first 10 information, because you have to look and see when the goals were scored. So yeah, it's a little bit of a manual process. I have a bunch of spreadsheets linked together that tally everything up for me. So as long as I just plug the numbers in, then it kind of does the work to organize and sort everything in the way I want it to look.
Seven straight first period unders for the New York Rangers. And I see that the Golden Knights, are they still undefeated in the first 10 minutes, right?
Yes, that is correct. Rangers are 7-0 to start the season. And the Golden Knights are still undefeated, 5-0 on the first 10. Winnipeg and New Jersey also undefeated on the first 10 bet. So, and those two, I believe they're playing each other, right? No, who's somebody's playing tonight? Oh, Winnipeg and Anaheim are playing together tonight. I'm sorry, yeah, but Winnipeg is still undefeated as well, 5-0. Vegas 5-0 and New Jersey 4-0 to the first 10. That's a goal in the first 10 minutes.
So how do you ride that out then? Because a lot of people, depending on how they feel about trends, they'll see 5 out of 5 or 6 out of 6, and they'll think, this can't continue. I imagine you know better because you've seen some of these teams hit at 65-70% clips in some of these markets. When you see a 5-for-5 or a 6-for-6, how does that affect the way you handicap these teams?
Well, you got to watch and see who's scoring the goals. So, or if there are, you know, in the instance of first 10, you want to know who's scoring. So if Winnipeg is the team that I'm looking at, I want to look and see, okay, well, who scored the goals? Was it Winnipeg that was scoring the goals, or was it the opponent scoring the goals? Because that might change the way I approach the game. If Winnipeg's playing a team that doesn't score first period goals, and Winnipeg was the one giving up the goals, then I might lay off if they're the team. So that's something to look at. And I track that as well. I keep an eye on who actually scored. I don't just put a one in if there was a goal scored. I track who scored it so that I can understand. So like Winnipeg, theirs has kind of been all over the board. They've been giving up goals and scoring goals. So they're not a great example. But like the Rangers, they've only scored one goal in the first 10 all year. And in the first period overs, they've only scored 2 goals. They've given up 4. So the Rangers are a team that they're not going to score many goals, it looks like, in the first period. So you want to, you know, use that as your handicap whenever you're looking at these. I'm one that I kind of ride the wave. I don't get scared whenever. I mean, I saw New Jersey last year go on like a 21-game run with some of these bets. So, you know, I kind of ride the wave on these teams, especially if the teams are really the same makeup, same players in and out each night. I'm going to continue to ride it as long as it makes sense.
it's not like a team in the first period is going to morph or change from October to November to December. I think if anything, Chris, stylistically, the first period is how they want the game to go, right? If you're a team like the Rangers, you want to keep it low and slow. If you're a team that plays with tempo and pace and you fly up the ice, that's how you want to dictate the pace in the first period or so. Like I've said for years, betting hockey and following hockey, I think the third period is the most random fucking period in sports. You know, first period sort of sets the tone. Second period is sort of in the middle. And in that third period, if a team is down 3-0, they pull the goalie, they start pinching. Like, that third period could be chaotic, right?
Yeah, the third period, I mean, obviously I track that data to understand it, but really, that's an in-game bet. There's going to be certain game flow situations where I wouldn't recommend a third period bet. Obviously, if it's a low-scoring tie game going into the third, they're probably going to play a more tight hockey than a team that's up 3-1 going into the third. That might open up a little bit because that team that's trying to catch up is going to play less D and they're going to push the offense. So they're going to obviously have more chances to score and they potentially are going to give up more on-man breaks the other way. So, yeah, that's more of an in-game handicap. There is some trends on the second period that was interesting. You know, the Rangers are kind of one of those two. They have 5 in a row to the under in the second period. So they're continuing that style of play into the second period. Now a team like Minnesota, the other hand, they're perfect this season to the over in the second period. So they're a team that really puts the foot to the floor in the second period. And historically, they have been a second period team. I remember from last year, Minnesota was one of the top teams to the second period over. So there are some weird trends that you uncover in this, the way these teams like to play. Tampa, for instance, has always been a pretty good under team. The way Cooper likes to play the game, they tighten it up. They have good goaltending, generally good defense. So, and especially now with some of the stars that are injured, Kucherov being out, they're definitely trending to an under team in the first period. Unfortunately, last night they went over with Buffalo, but that was the first goal that Tampa scored in the first period all year last night.
You can find all of this data on Chris's Twitter. He will tweet this stuff out at PSU Auto. For example, in the first period, Anaheim 5-1 to the over, Winnipeg 4-1 to the over, Calgary 3-1 to the over. And he has columns for first period, second period, third period, and then a goal in the first 10 in the first period. Let's stick with that Boston angle here for years. And I just got here this past season, so I was able to see the defensive style, the responsibility, the strength in net with Tuukka Rask. But this year, man, 3-1 to the over in the first period, 4-4 to the over in the third period. It doesn't even sound right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goalie. You kind of said it. No more Rask, different goalies. That's a big part of this. Obviously, goal scoring is dependent on the goalie. So, you know, when a goalie gets hot, the teams tend to go under. When it's a new goalie or a goalie trying to get his feet, we might see more overs. So that's kind of what we're seeing with Boston this year. I mean, they're playing Florida on Wednesday. I don't recommend a first period to play there just because Florida has only gone over 2 times out of 6 so far. Boston, obviously, 3 of 4, so I'm going to sit tight on that first period. But the trend in that game is Boston's been they're perfect in the third period, and Florida scored over 2 in the third period, 5 out of 6. So I'm hoping in that game for a scoreless first, maybe 1 goal in the first, and then I'm going to come in with a live over on that Boston-Florida game, just because both of those teams, Florida and Boston, had trended up towards the end of games with goal scoring. So that's part of how I use this data, is not only just to look at the first periods, but I want to understand what happens throughout the game to then get a feel for how I might want to bet the game live.
That's fascinating. So you're saying if Boston and Florida are tied 0-0 after 1, or maybe the Panthers lead 1-0 after 1, you'll get that live total that could move, you know, it could move from 5.5 down to 4.5. I don't know that it hits 4, but you're looking to use the data for the second and third periods to your advantage for perhaps a low scoring first.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that Florida-Boston game is probably going to come out of 6. That's my guess. based on my numbers. I have it at, what do I have it for tomorrow? 6.21. So I would imagine they're going to post a six on that. So if you get a scoreless first, you should be looking at over 4.5, maybe at plus money, depending on what the game flow is after the first period. And then, you know, a lot of this too, if you just hang in there in the second period and let maybe 2-3 minutes go by in the second period, you'll get that number down even better. So that's usually how I play it. If I'm looking at a live over, I don't bet it in the intermission. I let the period start, go two, three minutes into the period, and then go ahead and grab it. Sometimes you get burned, you know, if they score a goal in the first minute, but a lot of the times you get a better number there.
What would you say your percentages are pre-flop, in-game betting? What's the pie chart look like? What's the percentage?
I definitely do more pre-flop, probably 60-40.
Still 40, though. That's pretty high on the in-game side.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity, especially when we get deeper into the season. Right now, I haven't been doing a ton on the second and third periods, just kind of letting, you know, only 4 or 5 games into the season. I don't have a great deal of data. I mean, I have my stuff from last year, but these teams change so much, I don't like to use that all that much. So I'm still compiling the numbers for this year. I'm going to probably try and wait till we get 10, 15 games in, and then I'll start to dive a little bit more into the live side of things. But yeah, I think hockey and tennis are the two best sports that I've ever been able to bet live. There's just such fluctuations, quick fluctuations in odds that and with hockey, if you can just be patient and, you know, trust what your eyes are seeing. I do recommend if you're going to live bet a game, try and watch it, because you can pick up a lot by actually watching the game rather than following on your phone. It's hard to understand what's going on. Or if you are following on your phone, try and find a site that gives you the expected goals. I'd like to look at that to understand how the teams are playing, if there's high danger chances, if they're shooting the puck from the blue line. You know, that's going to record shots, but it's not ultimately real good scoring opportunities. So trying to understand what's going on in that game to use that to help handicap.
Who's worse right now, Chicago, Arizona?
I think we're seeing some historical things with Arizona here. I think Chicago, there's enough talent on that team that they'll eventually figure that out and turn it around. You know, will they make the playoffs? I don't know. But I think that team has hope. That Arizona team is pretty bad. I mean, they gave Florida a run last night and did score some goals, but I think Florida was maybe a little bit asleep at the wheel when the game started and then turned it on in the second period. But yeah, Arizona is a team I'm looking to fade whenever I can. The problem is their numbers are so out of whack. I think we saw, what, minus 400 last night on Florida. So obviously that's something that you can't – I wouldn't recommend playing that, but I'm going to try and find my spots. And I might look at Arizona in a spot where I just bet the first period minus a goal and a half, whoever's playing them. You can usually get that at a pretty good price, minus 110, even plus money sometimes.
Oh, that's so tough, though, because, you know, a team could dominate the first period, only be up 1-0. It's hard to get creative to bet against the worst teams. But you look at their last three, actually their last four final scores, 5-3 loss, 3-0 loss, 5-1 loss, 7-4 loss. I know the puck line isn't the greatest wager for a lot of people. They don't like to lay a puck and a half. And it's getting pricier. You know, I saw the other night they had a puck line. The favorite was -1.5, -220 or something. But on the average night, they're going to lose by a lot of goals.
Yeah, if they're playing a team that can score, yeah, the puck line is probably a good play. But the issue is the books have caught on.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hung a -2 last night or on Monday night on Florida. So they all, you know, that was a push, but. Yeah, it's hard to give up 2 goals in a hockey game. That's asking a lot.
Do you like the Florida Panthers? Can they contend?
I think so. They got some really good goaltending, really a 1A, 1B in goal. And you know, they have the ability to score as well. So, yeah, I like Florida. I think they're a definite contender to come out of the East this year. And Tampa doesn't look that great so far. Now, you know, it's early. But, yeah, I think Florida kind of in the East may be the team to beat this year.
Yeah, we saw a lot of money on them, too. In the summer, Florida was as high as 30-1 to win the Stanley Cup. Good luck finding anything on Florida that high. I think I saw a 12-1 the other day on the Panthers. Last thing, really, Chris, involves coaching. I know you do a lot of number mining, and you're finding all these stats, and you're charting and tracking and trending. But when we get into the postseason, how do you add in the element of coaching, and how important is coaching when you handicap playoff hockey?
Oh, yeah, very much so. You're going to need to understand, especially when you get to the playoffs, teams definitely play a little tighter to the vest when it gets to that time. When we get to the playoffs, obviously I'll post, and I did this last year, I give you a full head-to-head breakdown of the teams, whatever matchup it is, in the first round and all the way through the playoffs. I'll give you a full head-to-head so you can see exactly what these teams did against each other the entire year. But, yeah, you really got to know what the coaches do, how they want to play it, to understand how you want to bet these games in the playoffs. It does get harder, in my opinion, in the playoffs to play these periods just because teams – don't play as wide open as they do. A lot of unders. I play a lot of unders when we get to the playoffs.
I lied. I have one more thing. You put all this information out there on your Twitter page, and you share with the masses. Why is it so important that you educate and help people out? Why is that important to you?
Oh, I just want everybody to enjoy the game. And you know, when I started this, I was following some different people that had the information, but it wasn't readily available, and I found it very interesting. So I'm a man of the people. I'm going to provide it to everyone. I like to provide the information just to help everyone out and help them enjoy the game more. I promote hockey. I like the hockey, the sport. I think the players, if you've ever met any hockey players, they're all extremely down-to-earth people. I'm in Pittsburgh, so obviously, you know, Crosby and Malkin and Mario and all the guys for the Penguins over the years are just great people. So why not endorse a sport and promote a sport that has great people involved with it? So that's my thought, is I just want everyone to enjoy the game and have some fun, you know, obviously responsibly, but have some fun betting these, because there's definitely some opportunities in it.
That's Chris Otto. Follow on Twitter at PSU Otto. Hockey analytics, hockey handicapping, the information readily available for free for you. Chris, I appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Yep, appreciate it, Sam. Have a good night.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Chris Otto for chopping it up with the hockey information and analytics. Record check 184, 175, and 7, plus 0.2 units. We got four in the hopper. Ole Miss plus 2.5. Browns minus 3.5. Oklahoma minus 19. East Carolina minus 9.5. Coming up on the show Friday, legendary sports bettor Alan Dink Dinkinson will join the program. He's got stories for days, and we'll talk to Dink coming up on Friday. Cash some tickets. Make some money. We'll talk to you then right here on Chicken Dinner.